Hello, hello. Welcome back to Press Start by Goethe Institute Jakarta, Indonesia Game Association, and the Lazy Monday. In this episode, as usual, back with me, Ada Marissa Smita, and I have my friends over here.
Hi. Meet you again.
Hi, Kiki. How are you, Kiki?
I'm great. It's always nice to come back to this podcast.
Yes, and it's nice to have you too. So for today, what are we going to talk about, Kiki?
Mobile games, right? We're going to talk about mobile games, which is very interesting because I think it's a topic that is very interesting to dig deep, even though, because even though it's a very big industry, I think a lot of gamers, I think especially me, as a someone that works in a gaming media, has still a lot to learn about the industry itself. So I'm excited for this podcast today.
Yes, and we have someone special today to help us learn more about the game industry, especially in the mobile landscape. We have Marcus Poon from Google. Hello, Marcus.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Thanks, Adam. Hello, Kiki. How are
hello.
You?
Hello.
Thanks great, for great. Coming to our podcast, Marcus.
No problem.
All right. Before we start, maybe we can start by introducing yourself, Marcus. Just a quick intro to our listener.
Okay. My name is Marcus. I'm the Global Program Manager for Indie Games Related Programs at Google. I'm based in Singapore. So we run programs like Indie Games Accelerator that some of you might heard of. We have programs like Demo Day, Indie Games Funding, also Indie Games Groups, which is a community program. And, you know, hopefully we will be able to, you know, run more initiatives in the future to help like small game studios as well.
Awesome. Thank you. So, Marcus, I know we are going to cover a lot of cool programs that you lead, like Indie Game Accelerator, Indie Game Groups, and all the things that are very, very cool. But I'm sure a lot of people that already know you wants to learn more about your journey, your career. How do you started your career and ends up in Google?
Yeah. That's a very interesting question to answer. I graduated as a designer. So I studied multimedia design in Malaysia, multimedia university, and majoring in digital media. So my hope was to, you know, start my own business and, you know, like a digital agency to help businesses go online, right? And I am always passionate about tech stuff. You know, I'm also a gamer myself, so you know, I'm always interested in those kind of things. So I thought, like, you know, majoring in digital media is kind of like a cool thing. So I did, right? Graduated, and then I went on and kick off my digital media agency, doing kind of like end-to-end solutions for our clients. And along the way, though, I realized that it's not easy to become an entrepreneur, especially I'm not a very, you know, extroverted person. I'm not sure if you can tell, but I'm not that, you know, extroverted person per se. So I need to learn how to talk to people and this and that. And by chance, I met someone who brought me into like this business professional organization and talk about how to train ourselves, how to, you know, carry ourselves as a business person, as an entrepreneur, as a founder. And I think through those years, I've learned how to socialize, how to help people. And one of the motto in that business organization is kind of interesting, whereby before you actually expect to receive something in return, you have to give first, right? So I think I think that motto sits really well with me, even until today. And I like the idea of being able to provide help others to become successful before even thinking about, like, you know, what can I gain in return, even, you know, when we are running business and, you know, as an entrepreneur. And that actually helped me grow my business further and, you know, broaden my network as well while I was doing it. And, you know, the more I do it, the more I fell in love with the idea of building communities and doing more for the, you know, building an ecosystem and stuff like that. So a few years later, I got in touch with Google in an event, and the speaker on the stage was, she was looking for someone to help this build this business community, and then she's looking for volunteer. So I kind of, you know, volunteered myself and said, hey, you know, I've been doing all this stuff, and what if I do it with Google? And, you know, she was looking at me, and then she talked to me a little bit about, like, you know, what they were expecting and, you know, what is this all about? So it's a mix of, you know, technology and bringing businesses online, and it's, you know, right in my alley of, you know, what I've been doing. So I joined, and then, you know, tried to build like the biggest entrepreneur network in the Malaysia. So in a few years, we actually managed to do that. I think at the peak, we have like 10,000 entrepreneurs, you know, in our network, I think in just like maybe 3 years or so. So that kind of opened a lot of doors. So, you know, after that, I was also invited to be a trainer to talk about design thinking and whatnot for Google. So one thing led to the other. I think soon after that, an opportunity kind of opens up that requires somebody who is based in Singapore to come and kind of manage the community program. So that's the opportunity where I thought, like, okay, do I want to, you know, still run my business, or do I want to do this new cool thing that I am, like, you know, super passionate about? So I kind of, you know, passed over my business to my friends who's still running it at that time, and then I just jump on this ship. So that was, like, I never looked back, you know, since then.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Marcus, a lot of people, especially in Indonesia, wondering what it feels like working at Google. What are the most, like, fun thing or, like, the coolest thing that you feel like at working at Google?
Yeah, I remember the feeling when I first joined, even if it has been like almost like 8 years now. It's actually 8 years and, yeah, 2 weeks actually. So I still remember the first 6 months. I felt very intimidated. I felt like I have this like massive imposter syndrome every day.
Oh, really?
And yeah, massive imposter syndrome. Sometimes I do feel it too, again, like, you know, even until today. It is because one of the awesome thing about Google is the people itself, right? The amount of, you know, talented, really smart people from all over the world, you know, in one place, and they are all very helpful. So, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who you are. You can just reach out and say, hey, you know, I have a question about the things that you do. Can I learn from you? So it's almost always a yes, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll say, yes, you know, we can talk, and, you know, I'm willing to share. And I love that 2 bits. It's not a common thing to see in, you know, working space where everybody is like so willing to share, so open to talk about things. And I think that's like the one of the most enjoyable things to me, you know, as part of the Google culture. So the second thing is, I think it's a huge network itself. So, you know, not just the people that are smart and all that kind of stuff, but it's also like a really huge professional network internally. You can try to, you know, try to understand everybody's background, and, you know, everybody has like very interesting story to tell. So you wouldn't know like who's like a, I don't know, like a professional sports person and then turn into like a corporate worker, or you know, they also play games. You know, we talk about games all the time, and everybody's like, oh, you know, I also play this game, and, you know, and just kind of talk about like how to beat the boss and things like that, which is kind of pretty cool. So yeah, those are the things that I find really interesting.
Yeah, nice. Sorry. I'm kind of curious because I was reading, like you were mentioning a lot about learning, networking through other people. right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very valuable opportunity and asset, especially for small game developers. Because I heard a lot from Adam as well that the best thing that, you know, a small developer can have mm-hmm. is a huge network that can help them and like mm-hmm. support them, give them tips and stuff like that. So how can you actually make this work to your program? Like, how do you usually mm-hmm. approach those game developers to, you know, hey, like join this mentorship, like meet these people? Because like, is there any like skepticism or like, is there any like, you know, those kind of thoughts and feelings that this like game developers has for the program?
Yeah, I think you're right on point. Skepticism is definitely a thing, like especially for small game devs, because you know I walked through the journey myself. Like I was trying to run a business, and even though it's not a game development studio, but you know the feeling of becoming an entrepreneur, you have to think about like gazillion things every day. Do you want to focus on this? Do you want to spend time on that? And you know, often so much so that you forgot about like, you know, what's the important thing. So, you know, skepticism is definitely one thing. Like when people approach you and say, hey, you know, I want to help you. The first question that came into my mind, into my mind back then is that like, what do you want from me? Like, what will you get out of it? Right. So it's, mm-hmm. it's pretty common. When I was doing the volunteer work, like building communities, I got so many questions from, you know, which is the same question. So many people ask me the same question. It's like, why do you do this? Like, you know, this is a volunteer thing. Like, you're wasting your time. Like, what are you doing? Like, what do you want to get out of it? So skepticism is everywhere. It's common, right? So the small studios don't understand why we do it. So I think the first thing is to try to understand them in their shoes and, you know, try to connect with their mental state and try to understand what do they fear about, right? So if they are worried that, you know, we will come and, you know, take their IPs away or like, you know, copy their ideas and things like that, we have to then address those things. So in our programs it's pretty straightforward. We don't take equity, right? And then, you know, all like everything is if it need be, it will be paid for. So they don't need to do anything. Basically they just show up, you know, bring their best work, and then we'll just help them as the best we can. So those are the kind of like the criteria that we put forward, you know, for our programs. And when people, you know, read it, and then probably the first edition is not so popular because, you know, people probably don't know what we're trying to do. But the second edition and onwards, people can understand and they saw what we did. And I think that kind of, you know, kind of built up the momentum and also reputation as well.
Is the program that you mentioned is the Indie Game Accelerator?
We started in 2018. Indie Games Accelerator is not a name that people kind of relate to. So we do spend a lot of time trying to build that name and also tell people what the program is all about and, you know, how does it work and things like that. So I remember, you know, doing a lot of promotion back then.
And the first IGA, it's offline event, right? I mean, like, it's regional based, if I'm not mistaken, like, from the Asia. And can you please share a little bit about the program? How does it work before and now?
Yeah. Pre-pandemic, you know, let's just call it that. So everything is, like, in person. So we run the SLR program, I think, 3 months. So we meet them twice in person. So the first, after they've got into the program, the first week that we spend with them in, the first week of the program, we spend with them in person. So we get them into Singapore, and then also all the mentors that's supposed to help them and supposed to work with them, they're all in Singapore. So during that 1 week, not just the talks, the presentation or, you know, workshops or training or whatever, they also get to spend time with the people, not just with their peers, but also with the mentors over lunch, over dinner, coffee, you know, even, you know, after they got back to the hotel, they all stay in the same place. You know, they can just go by the pool and just talk about, you know, nonstop about games, right? Or problems that they have. So that That's the first week, and then we kind of send everybody back and then come back again during the last week of the program, which is kind of like a graduation. So that was the pre-pandemic format. And then now, after the pandemic happens, we try to readjust the format a little bit, because one thing is that, you know, there were a lot of travel restriction, and two is that we want everybody to feel included in the program. So it was virtual for, you know, majority of the time. Last year we tried hybrid, so a big portion of the program still virtual, but the last portion of the program is actually in person. So we actually have everybody here in Singapore, and then, you know, we meet them in person, although not everybody's here, but they get to meet and spend time with each other and celebrate that they graduate from the program. So that's the major difference. And I think program-wise, it's pretty similar. The amount of content, the amount of, you know, speakers and mentors that we have, it's just that now it's more like spread over all the weeks that we have. Before, it was like jam-packed in the first week, and then on the last week, and in between is just more like a catch-up thing. Yeah.
So you already run this program from 2019, right? So
18.
18, 19, 20, 21, and 22, right? So already 5 years running this program.
Yeah, we kind of skipped 2020 for a really good reason, which I can share later. So the upcoming one would be the fifth edition.
Ah, I see. Mm. After running for time, what's the success story of the program, like the most, like the amazing result of the program that you remember?
I think there are like different levels of success story, I would say. Like, I wouldn't say one success is better than the other. We have had a lot of studios manage to build their games to be better, just increasing quality, increase in kind of like growth in terms of like downloads and retention and whatnot. So that is basic. So a lot of them actually managed to do it. So because of that, they monetize better too at the same time. And also because of that, they grow their team. So a lot of the people that I met like years after, it's like they were 3 back then, now they're like 20. So to me, it's amazing, because it's like it's not easy to keep that many people, right?
And yeah, then especially for a game studio.
I know, right? So it must mean that they did something right, like, you know, in between after they graduate until now. So that is something that I'm super excited about. So they managed to like grow their team. That's pretty common to see. Some of them managed to land publishing deals, like global publishing deals, by launching their new game titles, you know, after they graduate. Some of them collaborate with each other, which is kind of cool. So not just the peers collaborate with each other cross region, they also collaborate with the mentors. Some of the mentors are publishers, some of the mentors are kind of like, you know, like design experts, or, you know, they're probably like some other kind of experts. So they collaborate, which is kind of cool too. I would consider that a success, because, you know, without the program, they wouldn't have known each other, right? And this is like, you know, the other side of the world kind of thing, or the, you know, opposite side of the world. And, you know, the more prominent one would be exit of a game. So I think one alumni sold off their game for 150 million, which
Wait,
is...
what?
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, whoa, like that is like, whoa.
That's crazy. So
yeah. And to me, I would think that it's such an amazing kind of results when this person kind of reached out to us and say, like, hey, I did it, right? I did it because of you guys, and I want to credit to you guys, and because of this, I want to come back to help. I think that is the most important thing, because this person understands that, you know, this is an ongoing thing, right? It's an ever-growing ecosystem, and without each other, it wouldn't work. And this person wants to come back and say, hey, you know, is there anything I can help? I want to be a mentor. I want to, you know, speak, or just tell me what I can do, right? And he goes like, you know, now I don't have to worry about the money. I can just do things I like. So So it's amazing, right? So there's this person, and then there's like a bunch of people managed to raise Series A seed funding. So, you know, there's a bunch of those too. So yeah, I think those are the success cases that we've seen. It's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, and I also want to ask, cause like, yeah, I'm so surprised like someone able to sell like Exeter Studio for that amount, and I think that should be a huge achievement for them. But like, I'm also curious, as in like, what is the common problem that you see in them when they enter? Cause like that's like after, right? Like after the graduation. Mm. So like, what is usually the common problem?
Yeah, well, just one. One highlight is this person didn't sell off the studio. The studio still exists. They just sold off the game.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's
even
game.
Better.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so surprising.
But the game was when they, I mean, just elaborate a little bit more. When they came to us, the game was already performing like quite okay. It's just not to the level that they want, or you know, they think it will be successful. So after they came in and learned a bunch of stuff, they keep on improving. And that's why I think a year and a half later, they hit the milestone that they want, which is like, you know, really bringing in a lot of revenue. And that's where they start like pitching it to folks that would be interested in the game. And then soon, I think about a year after that, then, you know, they got the game got bought out. Mm. Yeah. So which is pretty cool. But yeah.
That's surprising.
Yeah. It's pretty unique. But you know, coming back to your question, the challenges they face when they come into our programs or came to us, because they are small studios mostly, I think a lot of them are typically folks who really love building games, and they focus on building games, so they miss out a lot of. You know, details are probably not so fluent in terms of growth or monetization, and a lot of them are hesitant even, like, you know, to try out different ways of doing it. So for example, there were a lot of applicants before that we see, you know, come to us with ad monetization as the only monetization method. So when we talk about that, it's like, okay, you know, this is great, but you know, if you want to scale further or improve your revenue, you may want to consider like in-app purchases, for example. Like you need to change your game mechanics, or and you kind of design an economy into it, and you know, start doing the pricing and test things out, and all that kind of stuff. It's not something that they would be open to immediately. There's a lot of convincing, a lot of like, hey, you know, look at this case study and this is how they did it, or like, this is the way you can do it. So, you know, there's a lot of like back and forth process before they actually try it. And of course, you know, if they have not made enough money to cover their expenses and day-to-day thing, it's very hard to convince them to even go that step. So the first thing is that, okay, does the monetization even work for them? You know, does it pay their bills, right? And if that doesn't pay their bills, so what's the actual problem? Is it design? Is it UI, UX? Is it the idea itself? Like, is it a good product, right? So there's a lot to think about. Because these folks focus so much on building the product itself, it's sometimes a really hard thing for the mentor to tell them, say, hey, this product doesn't work. Just, you know, just move on. Just kill it and then just move on to something else, right? So it's also a challenge for us to help them realize, you know, what they're in it for, right? So what kind of challenge they're facing. They will always come to us and say, hey, you know, I need to grow my revenue, always. But is that the actual challenge that they're facing, right? So our program, or at least like what we're trying to do, is that we're trying to broaden their perspective of like, you know, the journey they're actually on. Right now, it's not just revenue that they're short of. You know, it's also knowledge about managing a company, you know, growing revenues, retention, and becoming a leader, and you know, just keep on trying and testing, and you know, analytics and reading data and whatnot. So we try to, you know, equip them with that.
Marcus, right now, after four IGA enrolled, how many alumni do you have from the program?
So each edition is about 30, 30, 60, 90. There's one edition that with 36. So I think slightly more than 120. So those are the alumni that's gone through the Indie Games Accelerator. We also had a couple of what we call the boot camp, which is a shorter version. So we did a boot camp in India and also in Brazil for Latin America. Those, I think each of that we probably have between 15 to 20. So if we add those, it'd be about 150.
150. Yes. Yeah. What I like about this program is like not only you care about them while they are in the program, but after the program, you still try to engage with them. You still try to gather them like at GDC, at Gamescom. So what's the purpose of this like meetup or networking?
It's quite interesting because, you know, we're also observing them and learning from them. It's not just like, you know, what we think is the best. So after the first edition, we were actually observing these folks and try to see like, you know, what do they care about. And after the first edition and the second edition, the alumni actually came together and start building their own community and stay in touch. Not just that they stay in touch, the mentors also stay in touch. And some of the mentors not just stay in touch with each other, but they also stay in touch with the studio. So because of that learning, we realized that, hey, you know, maybe there's something with the community that we can do, right? Maybe we should build a network and then, you know, actively maintain the network just for this process to continue, to, you know, really make it sustainable, really push the ecosystem forward by building momentum. So that's why we try to give back to first to the mentors who has been, you know, really nice to us and, you know, help with volunteering their time and, you know, really mentoring the studios, because without them, you know, there's nothing much we can do, right? So they are the heroes without the cape. So we want to make sure that we can add values to these people. So that was when, you know, we started to think that, hey, you know, maybe we should hang out, right? So we should hang out where everybody is. Like when we go to GDC, let's have a meetup, or Gamescom, let's have a meetup. And because these meetups are in person, we're also open to alumni who might want to, you know, come and say hi or, you know, learn new things and meet new people as well. So that was the idea. And that was also the reason why we start with Indie Games Group as well, because they after observing them, I think there's a lot of value for them to stay in touch and then grow. So that's also, you know, the reason why we start the community program.
Yeah, I think like we also need to. I think this is my realization as well that like community power force. Like, for example, learn something from someone, it can be in that short term, but like the most important thing is what comes after, stuff like that. So like following your explanation, like is a project or like that the alumni make from like after like the event that is coming from the Indie Games group.
Sorry, Kiki, I think I didn't hear the question.
Yeah, me too. I think the connection is not too good.
Yeah.
So in short, my question is like, is there any like project being birthed out of the Indie Games?
Project that is birthed out of the Indie Games. Is that the question?
Yes, after the Indie Games Accelerator, it's like, basically, from the alumni group that you explained like before, yeah, what like is there anything that? Sorry.
To be honest, I don't know. Because I know that some of them are actively working with each other, like collaborating on projects and stuff. But I don't know if they've released anything, as like a game title or anything like that. I know some of the alumni provide work for hire service to some of our mentors. Yeah. Mm. So, those would be, working for another company and producing the titles and things like that, which, that one I know for sure it happened, just that I don't know which title. Some work has been done collaboratively, but I within and between the alumni, I don't really know if they published anything.
I see. And I think it's a good bridging to the thing that you mentioned about indie game groups. So would you mind sharing a little bit about what is indie game groups?
Yeah, don't mind at all. So indie games group is our, kind of like the spin-off idea from observing these alumni and how they interact with each other. Mm-hmm. So after 2019, these folks that was from the class, they were like, hey, we love each other. Can we just stay in touch? So they went on to Discord and started a Discord server. And, a bunch of them were like, let's just keep talking. And they really liked that environment so much that they want to keep on pushing each other, keep on sharing, discussing about building games and whatnot. So they actually went on doing it. And then they invited me into the Discord. So I was like, this is such a cool idea because, obviously there are different ways of doing it. And they were doing it like, okay, it's just all the alumni, right? So it gave us, a really good idea to begin with. So we start drafting, the indie games group program, and then get support from the stakeholders. And then actually we piloted it in Indonesia. So Indonesia is our first community, and it has been solid and strong ever since. So this is a volunteer-led virtual community, mainly community for game developers or people who's in the gaming industry who likes to learn from each other. So it's more like a peer-to-peer learning platform that is led by volunteer and supported by Google, right? So it's basically just a think of it this way, like if I am new, I want to learn about building games. Usually I don't know where to go, right? I don't know who to talk to. I need mentors, but I don't know if anyone is willing to give me their time, right? So I need to go somewhere. So we want to be there for them. Yeah, we want to be the community for them. And we want to make the entry barrier as low as possible. So they can come in, everybody can say hi, and then, just take them in. And then help them in their journey. So that's what we wanted to achieve.
Other than Discord group and have a channel and people chat with each other, what are the things that usually indie game groups do?
So one thing we recognize is that indie game studios usually look at all platforms or all technologies and all kinds of different like questions to help them, build better games. So they usually talk about how to run a game studio, talk about, the successes and failures, talk about, this versus that, either technologies or platform, or anything like that, or what's the latest trend, insights. Sometimes, because it's supported by Google, we also, provided some content. So recently we are running this thing called Google Play Academy Study Jam. So we're taking, some content off of the Play Academy platform, which is self-learning platform, and then we make it into an instructor-led classroom environment. So you come and join, there will be an instructor kind of lead you through all this content, and you can ask questions. You can join with your friends if you want to, and then you can discuss, you know, there's like working group and whatnot. So there's things like that. There's Game Jam. I think Indonesian team is pretty good at like running this kind of stuff. They have they recently they're also like pretty active with Game Seat as well. And what else do they do? They do a bunch of stuff. So many. I don't remember all of them. They do so much things. Yeah.
And until now, how many IGG already established globally?
So we started with Indonesia, I think, March last year. We've just onboarded the sixth IGG in Europe. So they just kicked off last week.
Europe? A whole continent?
The whole region, yes. We initially wanted to kind of pick a country and then go in, but everybody seems to be sharing the same sentiment whereby within the country itself, the community is not big enough. So we hear that from different countries, and they were like, you know, what if we just join together? I thought it was a good idea because everybody seems to be okay with communicating in English. They seem to be okay with each other. So we pulled together several folks, some of them IGA alumni, some of them, you know, folks that we met along the way. So we'll pull together a few of them and then you know, just kick it off. So we have representation from four countries, I think, right now. And we hope to, you know, add more people as we go.
Yeah, that was great to hear. Like, you know, if I'm in a position of, I want to, you know, start making my own game, like, it's great to know that there's this type of community, like, to go to.
Yeah. And you know, it's also learning from my own experience as well. I wasn't exposed to these kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. And when people came to me and said, hey, you know, you should join, like, you know, some kind of group to help you grow. And I thought that growing process is accelerated for sure, because you're in an environment where everybody's like pushing each other and like, you know, you should do better. You can do this. You can try that. And you will feel like, okay, I'm empowered. I should do it, right? And then you keep on pushing yourself as well. So if I look back, I think I myself grew a lot when I was doing all those stuff in the community. And I think people would hopefully feel the same way, you know, when they're empowered in the same kind of environment.
Mm. Last question for me. I guess we're going to Adam again. We're hoping this kind of community and like an opportunity for, you know, more like game studio are more confident, you know, to make their own games, being successful. So what is kind of like your vision, like long-term vision from you personally, to see like the indie game studio grow, especially I think in not only globally but also in Southeast Asia as well.
I think my vision is that I hope anyone who's thinking of coming into the game industry, especially mobile game industry, can, you know, first think about Indie Games Group. You know, that's the reason why we built this kind of community, because we want to be the platform for folks who want to learn and who wants to build a network. And therefore, you know, it has to be the strongest, the largest in the region, if not in the world. That's the vision. So that's where we're heading in terms of where the program is. But of course, if you take a step back and try to look at all the stuff that we do, what we really try to do is that we want to build like a series of programs that kind of connect with each other. So what we really hope to see is that someone came from a community and then they try to build game, they receive help, build good game, grow, become successful, or kind of successful, they still need help. They join Indie Games Accelerator, get accelerated, and becomes, you know, even better. And then they, you know, do something else, and then they kind of, you know, become like super big or anything like that, and then come back and become mentor. That is the perfect and the most ideal sustainable ecosystem we're trying to build. And then just kind of keep on going, right? So you know, to the point that with or without us, that thing can still go on, like without even, you know, someday in the future, without any cancer starter, or we then even without like some of the programs that we do, people will start to do things like that because they see success. That's what we hope to do.
That's nice.
That's amazing. It's nice
scalable,
to hear.
Right? I mean, like,
yes,
you don't need to keep like feeding them with content, feeding them with support. It's already like running. It can grow scale on itself.
Yeah, it does take time, and it does take a lot of stakeholders coming together, understanding the vision, and want to be a part of it. And you know, there's a lot of convincing, a lot of negotiation, a lot of like, hey, you know, let's collaborate. It's not like it's something that we can pull off like within like a few years. It has to be like longer than that.
Right. Marcus, I have another topic that I want to get your insight, because Indie Game Accelerator is a global program, right? It's from all over the world. It's from the participant and the mentors come from US, from Brazil, from South Korea, from every countries. And now you're also building IGG around the world. I can say that you're the best person to have like helicopter eye regarding the indie ecosystem around the world, right? From your perspective, how's the landscape? Is there any continent that is more mature, and what do you think Indonesia right now on the map?
That's a good question. I think if we were to take an aerial view about you know, ecosystem per and compared to the other ecosystem in other countries, I think there's definitely strength and you know, places to improve or gaps. The strength that Indonesia ecosystem has is that you folks have a lot of creative people, really, really cool designers, artists, and some folks will also be able to like build pretty good games as well. I think Indonesia ecosystem is at the point where you know, the first batch of successful indie studios is going to graduate, and then will come back and then, you know, build more, which is the second wave. I think that is a really interesting thing to see and observe. In other countries that I work with, region, especially in the emerging markets, I think they are going through the same cycle. So some of them probably already have like the first exits, or you know, the first big indie studios that got bought over by other AAA studios or whatever, and then you know they keep on coming back and investing in the same market. So they probably already done the first round and they're building the second round. So we're starting to see a lot more like small ones popping up, and you know, they used to work with AAA studios, now they're building their own companies, and you know, so on and so forth. So I think they're moving into that same direction as well. So I wouldn't say, you know, one is better than the other, it's just a matter of time, right? But the strength that Indonesia ecosystem has is that, you know, I think creative talents is pretty interesting, and I've seen you know, really good ones. Compared to let's say more mature market, I think the quality of the games is probably, you know, a gap in terms of amount, not like, you know, not like one or two. It's just, you know, just talking about the volume. I think some markets would have more quality games, original games, than the others. I think Indonesia has a lot of very interesting ideas. Some of them is very specific to local context, which is kind of interesting. I would hope to see more, you know, titles that is a little bit more internationalized, or a little bit more on targeting the export market. I think that will be something interesting to see. Maybe collaboration or between the region might be able to help. I don't know. I mean, I'm just speaking off the top of my head. The other similarities that is interesting that I found out is that no matter what market we're looking at, the challenges usually are the same for the small development studios. They always talk about the same thing, no matter if we're talking about Europe, Latin America, or even like, you know, places like US, Japan, Korea, they always talk about the same thing. So because they go through the same process, right? Like, you know, it's also the same journey. So they always talk about the same. I just want to build games. But then they don't know how to grow it. They don't know how to monetize it better, so on and so forth. So it's pretty interesting to know that. And, you know, as much as we want to, we would love to, you know, help them ease into the topic with the stuff that we have, and hopefully they become better and learn this easier as well.
Interesting. You mentioned about it's not about the one region is better, it's just about the time, right? Mm-hmm. Your rough calculation, Marcus, within the gap between the most mature region with a lot of huge scale games out there with Indonesia, how far behind is Indonesia in time period? I mean, like 5 years, 10 years?
It's a tough question, Adam. You're putting me on the spot. I think, let's just put it this way. I think it's very close to Indonesia. You guys are very close to graduating the first layer of indie studios to become big. Yeah. So.
I think after one studios crack the egg of success, everyone will coming up to, right, usually.
Sure. Yeah. That's what we have been. So some of the IG alumni actually came from the more established and bigger studios in Indonesia. And when we talked to them, they were like, oh, you know, I know this person because we used to work together in this studio. Say, like, okay, you guys are from the same place. And that's a good sign because, you know, then these folks will start to build their own studios. And then when they grow bigger, they will train the next generation that comes out and, you know, start their own studios and whatnot. Although it may not, like, if you're a founder, you may not want to see this ever because you don't want your talent to go out and, you know, leave you because after you've spent so much time and energy training them. But it's bound to happen, and it's a good sign, right? And I think in terms of like talents coming from this big, more established studios, it already happened. I think we just need to see more like successes that inspire more people to come into to the game industry. I think you're not too far from that to see like the big break, the first layer, like boom, everybody's like, you know, super successful and all that. I think we're very close to that. You know, having said that, you know, they're already like very successful studios in Indonesia already. Which I'm just saying that, you know, you need that kind of momentum to kind of push with one layer higher.
Yes, we need to have, like you mentioned, sell the game for $150 million for everyone to look up and, hey, I can do that too. And let's
yeah, a few years ago, everybody would be like, I want to be Flappy Bird. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Marcus, you mentioned about new talents coming into the game industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is the, when we're talking about the ecosystem in the game industry, like if you want to make games, you need talents, you need funding, you need access to market. Mm-hmm. And the one that the letter to like the funding, it is something that I know if we do things right, we can get access to funding. And regarding the access to market, if you have the capital, you can do that. And of course, Google can help you with that. But the thing that cannot we can do instantly is creating the talent, right? If we train talent today, maybe we can see the result in the next 2 or 3 years or 5 years. Mm. What do you think about the role of, like, I don't know, universities or like education to prepare the talent for the next game developers? Are there needs a specific curriculum or like a specific mindset, or like should we as an industry work with them closely? What do you think?
I think you hit on you're on point with that. So I've learned this from, you know, VC some years ago. For an ecosystem to be established and also to have the momentum to move forward, there are a few stakeholders. Universities and learning institutions is definitely one of them. And then we have angels, we have VCs, which you mentioned, either VC or family offices. You know, those will be interesting too. Government associations, and also, you know, folks like us, which is, you know, corporate companies. So all these have, all of us have a role to play in this, in making this happen. And, you know, when we come together and then we sit down and say, hey, you know, this is the way to move forward, and we agreed on playing our role, this will definitely move forward. So coming back to your questions about universities, I think if universities see the same vision, you know, knowing that in the, this industry is something that is promising, it is not like, you know, back in those days, I don't know if you have to go through that. My mom used to say, like, playing games is a waste of time.
I think
Now
I kind of play games for my work, but but you know, if universities do have the same mindset as us, and you know, want to invest more in this, I think you know, not just having good curriculum or like programs, you know, they should also invest a little bit more in terms of like getting the right folks to come in to, you know, to give talks, or like partner with industry to, you know, for internship, or, you know, things like that. I think that would be cool to see. And also this goes back to, you know, the other stakeholders in the ecosystem. You know, is there a way to collaborate, right? So association is one part. And what if they collaborate with bigger studios or publishers or other private companies? You know, can we place them? Can we, you know, kind of do a project together or something like that? So there's like a lot of ways to do it. But what I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of actors that need to come together to make this work.
And is that part of a job, Marcus, to connect every one of them?
I'm here talking to you, so I'm trying my best.
One of the parts, then.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying my best. And then also, you know, I'm just one guy, right? So I don't know how much I can do, but I've been trying to learn more as we go and try to see, you know, what else we can do either together or separately. You know, how do we encourage the others to do the same? How do we inspire more people to be a part of this? So it's an ongoing thing. It's not like something that we have answered tomorrow or like something that we can change next year. But it's an exciting journey nonetheless.
Yes, sounds fun.
Yeah.
Be able to help a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay, you still have another question? If not, I think we're almost out of time.
Yeah, I have last question. Just answer it shortly. Mm-hmm. If I want to make a game like tomorrow, like if I from watching this podcast, I'm so inspired to start my own game studio,
right?
Like starting from zero, like what should be my first step? Yeah,
well, first they have to be a part of Agi.
no.
and then of course, you know, join game dev community, any kind. Really, of course, I would like them to join IGGI, the Indie Games Group Indonesia, but there are so many other, you know, community that is great. Either they focus on specific platforms or technology or game engine, it doesn't matter. They have to be out there first. So one thing, I mean, if I were to, you know, give one advice to folks who's starting off, is to never ever think that you're alone in this. You are not. Like you're definitely not alone. And don't ever think that you're alone and, you know, try to like have tunnel vision and sit at your home and, you know, try to code and try to make something happen. You know, don't do that. Just go out, talk to people, right? And then, you know, build as you go. So, you know, I think that's the best way to start.
Yes, and there's a lot of programs at IGGI, the Indie Game Groups Indonesia, that can help you with that. I remember they have a like one-on-one mentoring session for you who wants to know more about how is the game industry, and they have a game jam session for you who doesn't have a team to find partners. and they have a lot of things going on. So please go to this
link.
Go to that link and join the group. I think it's very, very, you mentioned earlier at Google, the thing that you like is that everyone's very open, want to share, and very warm. I think that's also embodied into the IGGI too. So for everyone who listening to this podcast or watching it on YouTube and want to start, I think IGGI would be one of the best starting point.
You mentioned something really interesting that got me thinking. I want to also add one strength to Indonesia game ecosystem is that folks that I meet has been helpful, friendly, open, willing to share. It is not the same in some of the ecosystem, but Indonesia definitely has this kind of vibe, which is pretty cool.
You know, it's gotong royong.
I do understand. Nice.
All right. So I think we almost ran out of the time. Thank you so much, Marcus, for being here and sharing your stories.
Yep.
Thank you for all the insight and the tips and advice. And I think the last question from Kiki will resonate with a lot of our listeners who want to start their either making their games or creating their studio. And remember what Marcus said, that we have you're not alone. We have all of the helps, the tools that you can use from the IGGI, the Indie Game Accelerator, and all the other program from the IGI and everyone here. We are willing to help you, so don't be scared.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Marcus, Kiki. Have a nice day, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Kiki. Bye. Thank you.